From the National Humanities Center, this is Wayne Pond with Soundings, conversations featuring scholars and visitors at the National Humanities Center. Welcome to Soundings, Religion and Social Values in America. Those are the topics this week on Soundings. My guests are Henry Levinson of the University of North Carolina at Greensboro, and Kenneth Woodward, senior writer and religion editor at Newsweek magazine. How does religion in America reflect the country's social values? By extension, in what ways does religion affect Americans' responses to issues such as social fragmentation, orthodoxy of belief, and questions about family life? Let's begin our conversation. Tell me about American values and American religion. Maybe we could start with some definitions. Are we talking about things like freedom and beauty and truth and justice and peace? How do American values connect to American religion? Henry, you want to take a shot at that?
Well, I think that the first thing that you have to say is that values are not a textbook problem, by and large. Kids don't learn values by reading rules in books. Kids learn values primarily by hearing stories, and particular sorts of stories. There was a philosopher of religion at Harvard at the turn of the century by the name of Josiah Royce, who said that the religions were communities of memory and communities of hope. And it seems to me that the way in which a child learns who he is has a great deal to do with hearing stories about where he has come from, the community history out of which his family and his nation and his group come.
Mm-hmm. We've got a lot of commentators, people who are in religion and on the edges of religion, who are telling us that American values are going to hell in a handbasket, that we have lost our sense of values, that we need to return. We need to return to something. Is there any truth to this, do you think, that our values are crumbling and that we need to return to something? What?
First of all, I think you're assuming that religion provides the values that are crumbling. Okay. And that's a separate question and one that I don't want to get into at the moment. Let me take the side of the people who are screaming and saying things are going to hell in a handbag. What validation would they have for that? What could I say about my own experience? I think public life has gotten a lot more harrowing. Than what it was in the memories of the people who are thinking that the past was better. New York City is a far more harrowing place to be. Our language, our discourse, the way we talk to each other is extremely crude. All the four-letter words now are what you're supposed to do. If having to reduce relationship between men and women to the expectation and satisfaction of sexual encounters, and that goes into our public entertainment, then it seems to me that says something about us too. The loudness and the noise which the young cannot get along, not only in their private lives, but also in their public lives, seems to me a falling off from modulation.
Here's a man who just turned 50 and he doesn't like rock and roll. Is that what you're telling me?
I never did like rock and roll. In the 30s and 40s and 50s, or the youth of parents and grandparents today, it is interesting that the celebrities that people talked about were people who were older or perceived to be older than the teenagers and the Bobby Soxers who were doing the screaming.
Now we got Madonna.
Well, today you've got adults parading as adolescents,
right,
or still singing about adolescent angst, or they really are adolescents. There's a parallel society and a screening out of adults from the adolescent world that I'm aware of. And therefore, the kids are taking longer to grow up. They are less mature than their parents were in the past. And in some cases, you're seeing they're scared.
Ken has a good point there, but it goes both ways in the sense that you have adults who are attempting to be or to work through adolescent sorts of anxieties, but you also have adults that are raising children to miss childhood. You have adults who are organizing their children's lives in very much the same way that they organize their own.
You mean because the parents work? Is that what you're after, Henry?
Because in great part because the
both
parents work, and both of them,
yeah.
and because there is no free time. available for kids, especially in families on the make. If you're a child in a family on the make, your schedule is as organized and articulated and regimented as someone at an office.
Should religion have answers to questions like this about, I mean, you are talking about the possibility here of, what, weakening the family. Do we look to institutional religion for answers to questions like this, Ken?
Well, I want to pick up on something that Henry said, because I agree with him, and very often there are several things going on at once. Mm-hmm. But in order to become an adult, there are some values and some capacities that one has to have. That is, put somebody else in your place. Uh-huh. How do you feel about that? That's kind of primary for making moral judgments. It's even in that and moral behavior, dealing with other people. What's expected of me? You do that by having adults around you as models. Now, if the adults aren't around you, quite literally are not there, then it's very difficult for a child to grow up. So very often the values we're talking about is, can I count on you? Mm-hmm. If I leave the house, you won't burn it down or have a party, or you'll do something. I can count on you. You're there.
Yeah.
Those are operative values that often don't get talked about, but are which are very necessary.
Well, they're not necessarily religious, though.
No. We can't bring in religion into everything. But now, you have to have certain kinds of relationships between children and parents, it seems to me. Including the time to talk about these things and so forth, in order to pass on religious traditions, those stories that Henry was talking about in the past. Mm-hmm. Who is going to tell those stories? There are an awful lot of people in my work with grandparents who the grandparents kept saying, I have no one to tell my stories to. And these children don't know how the end of their story is supposed to turn out because they have no precedent plot line. Mm-hmm. I cannot be like Grandpa because I don't see Grandpa. Mm-hmm. And when you do see Grandma and you know what you're going to be like her, you can anticipate what you're going to be like at that great old age of 50.
I think that the phenomenon of inflexibility has a great deal to do with all of this. I mean, inflexibility, the way we live our lives. Children simply assume now that if they're going to hear a story, they go to a particular place to hear it. It's church or it's school, but they simply identify hearing a story or achieving a sense of values with a particular institution, and usually one that is outside the family, outside the home, which does differ from at least 19th century American ways of living. I also think it has a great deal to do with the lack of free playtime that adults and children have together, because while it's important to see how children gain the sense of responsibility and specific responsibilities from their parents and other adults. Just what you point to, Ken, the ability to see something from somebody else's point of view and to empathize and sympathize with vantage point and difference comes by being able to exchange one's place with somebody else, and that takes play.
Let me put this to you. Henry Levinson and Ken Woodward, we're talking about American religion and American social values. A really very large question that let's just see where we can take it. How do Americans believe? Do they believe doctrinally? Do they believe theologically? Do they believe the country club sort of, the notion of community? Is it important that we know things like that as we try to figure out the relationship between religion and social values? Ken?
Well, I think it's important to know how certain groups believe and how they relate belief and behavior. And again, images and models serve. Let me just take a specific example to touch on something that Henry was talking about before. And let's look and see how one kind of religion is organized. If you look at the Reverend Jerry Falwell, you see an independent Baptist preacher who, in order to make it as a preacher, in the world that he's chosen to be a professional in, he has to be a very adept individual entrepreneur. There's no bishop in his world who's going to give him a church. He's going to have to go out and work up his own congregation. He's got to be a good salesman. This is the world of Willie Loman, if you will. Only one who made it, you see. Now, that's a very that's entrepreneurial. Now, when you look at the economics that he talks about, it's entrepreneurial economics as well as entrepreneurial religion. Keep the government off things. Keep them off people, because what you do is what you do by yourself. And there's a nice fit between those two.
So let me stop you, Ken. So what you're saying is that when some people accuse Falwell of being, far on the right wing and everything, you're saying, after a fashion, that actually he stands for one of our cherished American values, individualism. Let me do my own thing and be an entrepreneur.
Well, I mean, the idea of the entrepreneur is there's entrepreneurial religion and there's entrepreneurial commercialism, and the two of them come together beautifully because finally, where does he get his money to keep all these things going? Not from the folks in the pew that come to Thomas Road Baptist Church, although I'm sure they fess up a good deal. The fact of the matter is he's in the most, in one of the last places where you could be an entrepreneur. He's on television.
Yeah. Henry Levinson.
But Ken, this is just exactly where people begin to raise issues about why religious people can be so mean. In the sense that you have individuals who have brought together a kind of entrepreneurial commercialism and entrepreneurial religion, and others have begun to ask the question, well, what's the difference? And if entrepreneurial religion and entrepreneurial commercialism are the same, then basically what we're saying is that religious people are just precisely those who are out to get what they can, out to make the biggest bucks, out to organize the largest community that will shower power on itself over against the rest of the world. So that the idea of religiousness as a kind of service to others begins to dry up.
All right, Henry, let me respond to that. Yes, but there are theological warrants for this. You see, this is Calvinism, and the Calvinist had to ask himself, herself, how do I know I am saved? I know I'm saved if God blesses me in this life. I mean, and then with all the anxieties that the Puritans felt and Calvinists before them, how do I know? Well, they know because the church gets bigger, and God blesses you, and God bless, and there's no check on how much money you can have. You can make a lot of money. You can live like a king. It's also lower middle class, isn't it? One of our boys made it, and it could be a black preacher out of Harlem who thumbs his nose at the rules of Congress, and all his congregation says, the whitey's doing it, so our black guy is going to do it. Hmm. Now, Falwell's in the same position.
Well, I disagree in one sense. I would say that at least traditionally, a Calvinist would say, you can make a lot of money, but you can't live like a king. And the reason you can't live like a king is that the one thing that will ticket you to hell more than anything else is assuming that you have made it and assuming that you have been saved.
And looking at these external signs as evidence, is that right?
So you make money, but you make money to give it away. And you don't play games with yourself if you're a consistent Calvinist and say, well, yes, I'm going to give it away to my community, to my family, to my tennis courts, to my country club. No, you don't do that at all. You make as much money as you can to bring the earth to fruition, but then you give that money away. You are gifting, constantly gifting.
Well, my answer to that, Henry, is that you are holding up a historical ideal over against what the paltry kind of Calvinism that we have today.
Sure.
Here, we got to have the whole born-again movement here. If you talk to, I'll tell you a story. A true story involving some big names. I was interviewing Billy Graham years ago on a Sunday. He didn't have time for church, but then preachers don't tend to go to church when they're out, you know, on Sundays, unless they're preaching. In any case, I said to Billy, "How does it feel to be saved?" I said, "Now what?" I said, "It's wonderful." I said, "Well, what happens?" I said, "Now come on, Billy. Supposing you crawl into the hay with the organist." In those days, one thought of a female organist, but it could be male, whatever. And I said, and he said, "Wouldn't that be enough to change your future life?" And he said, "No, I just wouldn't get as high a place in heaven." So there's that old notion that I have been saved, no matter what I do, I'm going to be up there, and I could be one place or another. Well, I told this story a few years later to Mark Hatfield, who's a devout Baptist himself. And
this is the senator from Oregon.
That's right. I told him the story about Billy Graham. And he looked at me and he said, "Ken," he said, very seriously, and a very serious man, he said, "if I didn't know I was saved, I couldn't get up in the morning." And I said, "Senator, if I knew I was saved, I wouldn't get up in the morning." Now, these are two very different attitudes, and I'm talking from a very different tradition. The anxiety over producing that you are saved, and once you are, then you can do anything and you can accumulate anything.
The program is Soundings. This is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. You're listening to a discussion about religion and American social values. My guests are Henry Levinson of the University of North Carolina at Greensboro and Kenneth Woodward, senior writer and religion editor at Newsweek magazine. According to Henry Levinson and Kenneth Woodward, the claim that American social values are declining is not unique to the 1980s. Religious illiteracy is nothing new. But how do Judeo-Christian religious traditions manifest themselves today? And in what ways do they respond to contemporary social issues? Ken Woodward from Newsweek magazine and Henry Levinson from the University of North Carolina at Greensboro. We're talking about American social values and American religion. Ken, what's the hottest issue in American religion today? Would it be the role of women in the church? Would it be the churches and questions about abortion? Would it be, for example, the sanctuary movement? I guess it's impossible to say that one of them is more important than all the rest, but what have you got your eye on?
Well, first of all, I think that I don't separate religion and culture very much. And what goes on in denominations and the kind of conversations that are brought forth because of those controversies is not where the excitement is. I think there's been, for a long time, a kind of secular self-confidence that religious conversations, religious issues can be best be left to private consciences, private conferences, private rooms, etc. That's broken down. I think everybody's scared, and the kinds of questions that are being talked about in the public domain are the kinds of questions that were usually asked and very often answered all too quickly in religion. So now religious people of religious belief can enter unself-consciously into civil discourse on issues.
There's a sort of validation that has occurred, a transfer, as it were.
I think on the intellectual level, you can put some asterisks, Henry, around this if you want, but on the intellectual level, I find in my dealings, because I also write a section called Ideas, which is social sciences, occasionally philosophy and things like this, there's a lot of openness to theological perspectives and the kind of rigor and attacking issues that people care about.
Yeah.
Attention to language. That's certainly got some philosophers think about this. Metaphor, image. Why are we here and what are we doing? And then we've got life-threatening situations, nuclear holocaust, and so on. Mm-hmm. So they can enter full partners.
Henry, let me ask you to follow that up from the standpoint, without being self-serving or apologizing at the same time. Are there issues in the academy, in philosophy and religion, that you think are important to a general audience? What would they be?
Well, I think there are important issues, and they have primarily to do with training older kids in this country to be responsible citizens, and not only responsible citizens in the country, with a sense for what would count as service, and what would count as making a contribution, not simply to oneself but to the social scene, this kind of training certainly doesn't start in college, and it wouldn't work in college if it didn't have background in the family and in previous schooling.
Mm-hmm.
These are the sorts of issues that get reflection and that get developed within the context of programs in religion and philosophy.
Ken Woodward?
I'd like to pick up on that because it's kind of important. I would both agree with you, Henry, but there's a point at which I'd want to criticize and perhaps clarify a point. You're talking about service to other people, and you've held it up in our conversation as being terribly important to religion. And one can legitimately ask why, for example, that necessarily has to be so. I would say that the idea of religious story touches on what you're talking about, and it would touch upon it in this way. In other words, a Methodist theologian put it to me this way, and it's very simple. He said, Protestants know how much they rely on the structures they have created, basically disbelieve in those churches as churches. And Catholics know how much they may criticize those structures that they live in, still regarded deep down as Holy Mother of the Church. Okay, what I mean to say is that Catholics are born, and there's 50 million of them in this country, the largest single religious tradition here, are born with a prior sense that we're all connected. Jews are too. We're all connected. The story of Genesis, in part, is a story of connectedness. It's a story of a lot of other things as well. But that you don't become a person except in relationship to other people. There are philosophical traditions in Thomism and the personalism of this Pope. It's a line of philosophy that the man has been promulgating. And so you believe that. Now, American society, we are instructed by a number of books, including the Bella book recently, is that we speak a language of individualism and social contract theory. I don't relate to you unless you and I come into some kind of relationship. Either we bump into each other like billiard balls, or we contract for something. So here is a place where at least two religious traditions that I have mentioned, the Jewish and the Catholic, run in their bones, counter to a very strong and, I think, destructive American tradition. So when there's a claim to make for community, why should I do it? Noblesse oblige? Or what? What claim does that person have on me? Scriptures, Jewish and Christian, are powerful in their answers.
Henry Levinson?
I agree with you, Ken, but I think that the generic human bonds that you refer to that get so much play in Catholicism and in Judaism, for example, are also there in Protestantism. The problem is that there's another sort of story that gets told as well, one besides the common human bonding story. There's a strain in the Christian tradition which suggests that the way we establish significance for ourselves and the way we get saved, the way we achieve well-being, is not by making contributions to a particular community or feeling bonds with other human beings so much as it is coming into direct contact with some non-human reality.
The transcendent.
The transcendent, namely yeah. God. And that where this is the primary story, sometimes the direct relationship of responsibility between and among people and the sense of bonding, the sense of generic humanity gets lost. And I don't think it's any coincidence that the entrepreneurial sorts of Christianity at work today emphasize the kind of conversion and the kind of religious experience which demands that people leave community to come into this direct relationship with the transcendent or God or Jesus Christ or whomever. So that the important thing for that individual is his one-on-one relationship with deity, not the contribution that can be made to this kettle of fish that we're in.
Well, I'll agree with you. I mean, if you like sports metaphors, evangelical religion is like it's like playing golf. It's one-on-one with God. It's against the course. And Catholicism is very much like the National Football League. It has yes. all kinds of varieties, and they compete somewhat, but then they got a commissioner at the top as well, you see. And where you put the mainline Protestant churches is someplace else. Look, I think we're going back, in one sense, the difference between Judaism and Christianity. Christianity is, from a traditional point of view of Judaism, it is a heresy. And what's more, it suggests that the family that I was talking about so much before, that it's a break in the family. And there is a new community called the ecclesia, or the church, that is more important than the old family. So going way, way back, there is that difference between even Catholic Christianity and Judaism.
Ken Woodward from Newsweek and Henry Levinson from the University of North Carolina at Greensboro. We've been talking about American social values and American religion. Let's conclude our conversation. Look into the crystal ball for me. Do you think that there is a healthy, productive relationship between religion and social values? Are we stagnating? Are we moving forward? What do we need to be aware of as you look at a question like that? Henry, let me start with you.
Well, I think religious controversy is a sign of health. And I think that there tends to be a great deal of religious controversy aired in public today in this country. Just how healthy is anybody's guess? And I think to a great extent it depends on whether Americans can overcome their constant possibility of falling into this us versus them mentality towards everybody else.
Mm-hmm. Ken? Are you done, Henry?
Yeah, that's fine.
Ken Woodward?
Well, my view of religion is that it is a, among other things, it is a very good way of critiquing society.
Why? Because you're talking about very fundamental questions?
Yeah, not only that, but it should be, religion should make people very, very skeptical. Uh-huh. They should know how difficult it is to be good. They must know that God isn't available on a leash like he appears to be in vulgar, popular, televised religion. A deeply religious person is, to me, the kind of person all people ought to be. And I think to feel the tension between the transcendent and the immanent. There are all kinds of things that come through a genuine religion that I think are terribly important. So when you're talking about civic values, it seems to me this country's only been around for 200 years, and it does need criticism for something that's been around a lot longer, it seems to me. Civic arrangements are just that, our arrangements. I think finally that what we're seeing in terms of the fundamentalists and so forth should be welcomed, the rise of fundamentalism, because these people were there. Did we, who are so reasonable and so tolerant and so well-educated, expect them to come enter the realm of civil discourse with Nike tennis shoes on? No, they're going to come with cleated feet because they've been kept out. Yeah. Better to have them inside than outside festering. And that's going to be rough and tumble, especially on the Republican Party at this particular time. I dislike wholly secular societies, don't think they work, think they are boring, think that religion makes life, including sex, including food, including any dimension you want, much more exciting. Capacity to screw up, yes, but also to do much more.
Mm-hmm. Henry Levinson?
I don't know of any wholly secular society, but I do think that there's a problem distinguishing sometimes between religious society and secular. If you take the billboard that I constantly come across around the Greensboro area, which tells me, God loves you, America, then it becomes difficult for me to see the gap between the transcendent and the immanent that you're talking about. It becomes difficult to get that kind of critical leverage on social issues if what we're being told is that things here in River City are just divine. It seems to me that much of what passes for religion these days is that statement plus disgruntlement over the people who are saying things are different.
The program is Soundings. This is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. You've been listening to a discussion about religion and American social values. My guests were Henry Levinson of the University of North Carolina at Greensboro and Kenneth Woodward, senior writer and religion editor at Newsweek magazine. During a recent fellowship year at the National Humanities Center, Henry Levinson worked on a forthcoming book about the American philosophical and religious thinker George Santayana. For a cassette copy of Soundings on Religion and Social Values, send $3 to the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina, 27709. Next week on Soundings, a conversation about the life and work of the American writer James Agee. My guests will be Richard Schramm of the National Humanities Center and Lawrence Berggreen, author of a recently published biography about James Agee. Until next week, this is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. Support for Soundings comes from the National Endowment for the Humanities.
Listen to Soundings. This is Kim Nielsen at the National Humanities Center, inviting you to join Wayne Pond this week for a discussion about religion and American social values. How do these important elements reflect and influence one another in American life today? Some answers and insights from Henry Levinson of the University of North Carolina and Kenneth Woodward, religion editor at Newsweek magazine. Religion and American Social Values, the topic this week on Soundings, from the National Humanities Center on this station.